Good morning, all. The first case scheduled for argument is Ameritech versus McCann. Mr. Knox.
Good morning, and may it please the court, counsel. My name is Craig Knott, and I am here this morning on behalf of SBC Ameritech, respectfully requesting that this court reverse the judgment of Judge Randa from the Eastern District of Wisconsin that, in our view, erroneously found that the declaratory judgment that Ameritech sought violated the 11th Amendment to the Constitution. This case is about AMA studies, or AMA reports. These are reports that are created at the request of law enforcement when Ameritech searches its computer records for records of incoming telephone calls. Now, Ameritech is in the business of creating bills for outgoing telephone calls. It does not keep track of incoming telephone calls.
Mr. Knott, can I just ask you, is all the raw data for these AMA courts in the Ameritech database, or is it necessary to find raw data elsewhere?
The raw data, Judge Wood, is in Ameritech's system.
It's just that you don't compile it into something like the billing records or the other kinds of things.
It's that we don't compile it, and it's a little bit more. Wisconsin is divided into 26 geographical regions by Ameritech. Each region, at the end of the day, has a tape, which is a magnetic tape, a computer record, that shows all of the phone calls that took place. Each tape has about 4 to 5 million phone records on it for, you know, a grand total of anywhere between 100 to 130 million phone calls a day. Because we don't keep track of incoming telephone calls, what needs to be done is that every phone call that came through Ameritech's system on a particular day needs to be checked. So in a sense, you're reverse engineering it. You're looking at everybody's outgoing phone bill to find a call that was placed to the number that the police or whatever agency it is cares about. And so for each day that law enforcement requests a search, Ameritech then constructs a search and then puts its computers to work looking at everybody's telephone bill, essentially, to find an instance where some other number called the number that the police or law enforcement cares about. That information then comes back in a stream of data that's incomprehensible to you or to me, but then requires the application of a trained person's eye and further computer technology to sort out where the call originated from, who called, how long it lasted, what day it took place on, the kinds of things that the police might care about as they investigate a crime. So that's the process by which an AMA record is created.
Does it pick up calls that come from outside of Wisconsin into a Wisconsin number?
Most of the time it does. Because Ameritech is the dominant telephone company in Wisconsin.
We know.
Almost any telephone call that comes into the state is going to hit Ameritech's system at some point. So even if it's not, Let's say the call is placed from Iowa, where Ameritech is not the phone company, what will happen is, for example, AT&T or MCI will carry that call. It will then come most likely to Ameritech's system and then will be routed by Ameritech's system. So it's not as if someone in Madison has to pick up the phone and call someone in Milwaukee. The same thing would happen if someone in Des Moines calls someone in Milwaukee. It's going to hit an Ameritech switch, an Ameritech computer at some point, and therefore would be in our system as an outgoing call, so to speak, even though it won't appear on Ameritech customer's bill. So it does apply then to calls that come from outside as well as those that come from within the state. I should mention that this is not in every case. There are parts of Wisconsin, just as there are parts of Illinois and anywhere else in the Ameritech region, where another telephone company provides the service, in which case we would be unable to do it. Most of the time it's going to come through Ameritech system.
Now, do I understand correctly that the Electronic Communications Privacy Act prohibits Ameritech from disclosing this telephone call information, even the raw data, unless there is some exception in the statute that would then allow you to disclose it?
There, with some exceptions, Your Honor, the version of the ECPA that was in effect in 1999 allowed Ameritech to disclose information to parties other than law enforcement. There were special restrictions for law enforcement. There are other provisions of the ECPA that aren't an issue in this case that allow Ameritech to use telephone records to protect its rights and property, is the language of that. There's a case that I know that you're familiar with, the Schmidt versus Ameritech case, in which a verdict for the plaintiff was recently reversed on March 29 by the Illinois Appellate Court, based in part on the ECPA, saying that Ameritech has the right to review telephone records to protect its rights and property. I don't think that any of those provisions are at issue here, but the provision, the ECPA, does allow Ameritech to use, in certain circumstances, telephone records without judicial process or without the consent of the subscriber. In this case, before law enforcement can get them, there is a system set up that requires a warrant, requires some judicial order, or in some cases, merely a subpoena that an attorney could get from the...
Where I'm trying to go with it, or my thought on this, is if the ECPA in general protects the privacy of these records and in general prohibits Ameritech from disclosing them, then in the absence of provisions like 2706, et cetera, would a law enforcement official be able to get them in the face of the federal regulation?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. And the reason I don't is that in this particular case especially, we're talking about something that has to be created, that doesn't exist otherwise. The state relies on Section 968.135, a statute that allows law enforcement in Wisconsin to get documents. The ECPA is much broader and allows access to records or other information. I don't believe that absent the appropriate judicial process as spelled out under Section 2706 of the ECPA that law enforcement could gain access to these records. To double back, there are other statutes that restrict or protect the privacy of telephone records. There was one that was not in place when the Schmidt case came up, the 1996 Telecom Act, which also then puts restrictions on what Ameritech and other telephone companies can do with what's defined as customer network proprietary information, I believe is the phrase. And that places limits and restrictions on what telephone companies can do and cannot do with telephone records. Mm-hmm. So there are limitations, and specifically with respect to law enforcement, which is at issue here, Ameritech cannot release these to law enforcement. The language of the statute is mandatory, that law enforcement cannot get access to these without the appropriate judicial process.
So it would be your position, I take it then, that if under this Wisconsin statute, the district attorney in Milwaukee or anywhere else simply got a subpoena for all of your raw data, existing documents, you would nonetheless be prohibited from turning it over to them?
That is correct. When it comes to AMA reports, either a warrant or a judicial order, very much like a warrant, to the procedure is spelled out further down in the statute, is required. Simply getting a subpoena is not enough. If they want telephone records, toll records, what we would commonly refer to as a telephone bill, the kinds of things that we do keep track of and have ready to go, then a subpoena under the statute is sufficient. Otherwise, there is no access to these records by law enforcement. Certainly part of the privacy enhancement that Congress wanted to apply to electronic records that did not exist before, they set up that hurdle that law enforcement needs to cross before it can gain access. So the short answer to your question is yes. Without appropriate judicial process, it is our position that law enforcement would not be able to gain access to these AMA reports. That is especially significant in our view in this case because the ECPA we believe, grants law enforcement a right that, especially in Wisconsin, that it did not have previously. ECPA is a privacy statute, but it also was designed to give law enforcement reasonable access to information that it might need to solve crimes. And what the ECPA does is it gives much broader access than the Wisconsin statute on which the state relies. That only allows access to documents. As we set forth in our brief, AMA reports are not documents. They do not exist.
Does the record show how much it costs to produce one of these AMA studies? Do we have any notion of that?
Your Honor, the record does not, and that information has changed in any event. As of this year, Ameritech gives law enforcement region-wide anything up to 7 days for free. We've been able to implement some new computer technology that makes it less expensive to write that off than it does to chase it down through billing police agencies. From day 8 and beyond, the cost is $3 per tape. You recall that I mentioned that there are 26 tapes. That is, Wisconsin's divided into 26 regions. The phone calls for that particular region are going to be on a tape. If law enforcement then would want a search, it's going to have to look at 26 tapes. So the cost then for one day would be $3 times 26. This is a one day in excess.
Well, that would be if they wanted you to search all 26 areas, right?
Well, that would be the only way to create an AMA record.
Oh, the tape is for all 26? There's not 26 tapes? I may admit.
No, you're correct. There are 26 tapes, but because we don't keep track of incoming telephone calls, we have to search every switch in the Ameritech system to find out who may have called. So the request comes to us, we have a bomb threat, we have a suicide, we have something we're investigating. Who called number 123 on this day? In order to answer that question accurately, we'll have to look at all 26 tapes.
Do we have any estimates, not what's the load factor here? I mean, what are the number of requests that law enforcement has been making, collectively all the agencies upon the system?
Your Honor, the record contains some general information about that. Wisconsin leads the pack in the Ameritech region. For example, the Milwaukee police make more AMA requests than the Chicago police, than the Detroit police, than the Indianapolis police, Cleveland, Columbus, any city that's larger than Milwaukee in the region. At the time, there's an affidavit in the record that deals with this issue. And at the time this lawsuit was first filed, approximately 54% of all requests in the Ameritech region came from Wisconsin.
Yeah, but I appreciate that. That's an interesting statistic in the sense of comparing cities. But how about total load? I mean, 54% of what? I mean, what are we speaking here of in terms of actual requests?
The
record shows.
The record, Your Honor, I could tell you that it's not in the record. For the year 2000, the most recent complete year for which I was able to get information, the city of Milwaukee police, that is the Milwaukee police, had 54 AMA requests. I'd be happy to provide that information to the court if you'd find that helpful.
I find it kind of interesting. This litigation may be about a pretty modest number of inquiries. Now, that doesn't preclude a growth in the future, and I suspect that's what we'll face, but I've got an interest.
Your Honor, it's not an immodest amount, and primarily because of this. The capacity, we can go back 60 days. That's how far back these records go. And a request of that magnitude is very substantial. Ameritech's computer, for example, would have to spend, in order to the computer time on that would be 32 hours to check every phone call than it was made to a certain number in a 60-day period, which is the maximum amount. So in addition to the number of requests, the size of the request is important in terms of its number of days.
And does the price change based on the scope of the request? You mentioned $3.
It does not, Your Honor. The new pricing plan, we charge $3 per tape beginning with the eighth day, and if it's longer, it does not. If, however, and the statute gives us this right, and we reserve that right, if there was an exceptional burden, then we might reserve the right to go to court and ask for something extra. I see that my time is up.
Thank you for that. Ms. Schaefer?
May it please the court, my name is Mary Schlafer. I'm an assistant attorney general for the state of Wisconsin. I appear today on behalf of appellee Milwaukee County District Attorney E. Michael McCann. In the course of conducting criminal investigations, District Attorney McCann, when appropriate on occasion, obtained subpoenas under the state subpoena statute for any or all records reflecting telephone calls to or from a given number.
But could we just cut to the chase here, because this is an action for a declaratory judgment, and the Supreme Court's recent decision in Verizon, Maryland against Public Service Commission of Maryland seems to me conclusively to have shown that at least some of the things the district court said were in error. He did not have the benefit of this decision at the time he wrote his opinion. So, for example, in Verizon, the Supreme Court says, Verizon may, and I'm quoting, Verizon may proceed against the individual commissioners in their official capacities pursuant to the doctrine of Ex Parte Young. That's precisely what Ameritech is doing here, and the district court erroneously said that no Ex Parte Young suit could occur in an official capacity. But that misunderstands Ex Parte Young, and that's now been underscored. His subpoenas don't seem to be for the raw data. They seem to be for these separately generated studies, and it's unclear to me why, without following the procedures of the statute, he would have any more right to commandeer labor on Ameritech's part than he would on the part of an auditor, or that he would on the part of anyone whose services he wanted for purposes of assisting a criminal investigation.
Well, Judge, let me first address the question with respect to Verizon. The state views the Verizon case as being a straightforward application of the Ex Parte Young Doctrine. The request that Ameritech has brought to this court, we believe, is distinguishable because Ameritech is specifically asking for a declaration that they are entitled to reimbursement.
But you see, I understand that you've made that distinction, but here's my problem with that. Right now, in this lawsuit, the only thing they want is a declaratory judgment about the statute. If the district attorney decides he's not going to use AMA studies anymore, the state will never pay a nickel. I don't see why this isn't the same as, for example, a lawsuit about the way welfare benefits are computed. And if there's a declaration that welfare benefits have to be computed in a way more favorable to the recipients, the state in the future will certainly pay money. But that's something that's well understood under Ex Parte Young.
Judge, I think that there are two relevant distinctions. The first is that the only possible advantage that Ameritech can obtain through getting this declaratory judgment is to use it as res judicata against the state.
Why do you say res judicata? Because could we review the requirements for res judicata? Number one, an action between the same parties. Number two, the same transaction or occurrence. You know, number three, the claim has to have been encompassed within the earlier claim. We don't have those requirements satisfied. I mean, this is sort of civil procedure 101.
I think that an argument could be made that this would be issue preclusion, because if District Attorney McCann issues a subpoena in the future and Ameritech were to try and obtain reimbursement, that they would certainly argue that when we were before the court here, the same parties were involved, and essentially the same issues were involved.
Well, it certainly should deter any lawsuit, unless it doesn't belong in federal court, because it's hypothetical, should determine, for example, the meaning of a statute. But there is no present request for reimbursement before this court. You know, anytime there's a declaratory judgment about the meaning of a statute, just as in the case of my welfare benefits example, the next time somebody comes in and says they want their benefits, if the state flouts the earlier court order, it will, you know, be called to task in some fashion or another.
Judge, I think that there are two distinctions. Again, I'll state that the only purpose that this lawsuit could serve would be to try to establish a right for a money judgment against the state and to use that in another form. The distinction between this case... Excuse me.
No, go ahead.
The distinction between this case and between the welfare cases you cited, the Milliken case that Ameritech has cited in its brief, is that in those cases there was a violation of a federal constitutional or statutory right, and the monetary relief was authorized as a means to implement programs that were necessary to discontinue or to correct the underlying violation. I think it's also important to note that the Milliken cases and the welfare cases were based on alleged violations of constitutional rights, where actions brought involving 14th Amendment rights, and granting ancillary monetary relief in the context of those cases is consistent with the Supreme Court's decision that Congress can abrogate a state's sovereign immunity under the 14th Amendment. Here we're dealing with the ECPA, which Ameritech concedes and the district court found was adopted pursuant to Article I powers, that this is Commerce Clause legislation. In Alden, the court held that Congress cannot abrogate a state's sovereign immunity under Title I enactment.
But,
and
you know, the problem with that, I think, is the following. We don't have the case before us in which Ameritech is seeking any money. What we have is the case about whether, for its work, it's entitled to reimbursement. And what troubles me deeply about your logic is it seems to me to say that there can never be a takings action against a state, because if you think the district attorney can simply go out and require private parties to perform work to assist his law enforcement efforts without reimbursement, I don't see where the limiting factor is. And yet the Supreme Court, in many cases, as recently as Palazzo against Rhode Island, has entertained taking clauses cases against states directly, as Palazzo was. That had to do with state wetlands regulations, as you may remember. And it strikes me that this statute, since what he wants is not an existing record, we also don't have before us the case where he just subpoenas all of the tapes and has his own computer people try to run through what the tapes have on them. I don't know what the outcome of that case would be, but it doesn't seem to be this case.
Judge, we vigorously dispute the representation that we are requesting something other than existing records.
But that how can you say that, though? If they haven't compiled them, if they have to spend 32 hours of computer time to create them?
Judge, this is a representation that Ameritech made for the first time in its reply brief. This matter is before the court on a motion to dismiss. And in their motion to dismiss, they simply alleged that they are required to search for and compile records. That's no different than what any citizen or other business is requested to do. If I have evidence in my files that are related to a criminal investigation and I am asked to produce those pursuant to a subpoena, I have to go search for and compile.
But do you have to take, suppose you had a lot of, the last 2 years worth of your credit card statements, and what the state wanted wasn't just the last 2 years of your credit card statements, but they wanted you to go through, create a report, figure out how often you had gone to restaurants, divide the number of restaurant bills by 15% to see if people were paying, you know, the appropriate tips, you know, at the restaurants you went to or something like that. In other words, if you had to take that data, manipulate it somehow, and create for the state a new report that is not in existence, would you agree that that would have to be paid for?
I would agree that in certain circumstances where the request for existing records I would agree that if someone is asked to produce a record that does not exist, that requires some sort of analysis and some sort of additional work product, there may be limitations on what the state can receive. But I want to emphasize to this court that we believe that Ameritech is misrepresenting what is in the record here. Number one, the subpoena that the state has obtained is a subpoena for any or all records reflecting telephone calls to or from a given number. If Ameritech does not have those, then Ameritech can go into state court and move to quash the subpoena.
But what if they can create them? When you say they don't have them, that's seemingly a definitive answer. But what if it's the position is that, you know, you can assemble them? What would the state's position be?
Our position is that if you have responsive documents that are in a database, and you can produce those documents by doing a database search, that you're obligated to do so, and that businesses and individuals are commonly asked to do so. Now, as I mentioned, this case is here on a review of a decision on a motion to dismiss, but Ameritech did bring a motion for summary judgment. And as a result of that, there is evidence in the record, and the evidence that's in the record disputes the indisputable facts in the record disputes Ameritech's contention. Specifically, there's an affidavit from an Ameritech employee that says that that Ameritech keeps this information as part of its normal business records. Ameritech has asserted today that it does not bill for incoming calls. That's incorrect. The affidavit establishes that with respect to cellular communications, they bill for incoming calls. With respect to credit card calls, they bill for incoming calls. But that data is kept on the same tapes and processed in the same way as outgoing calls. And moreover, that employee indicated that they do run these AMA searches, not just in response to subpoenas, but for their own internal use. And furthermore, the description of what an AMA study is, excuse me, is simply that we query the database. We define criteria, we enter that into the computer, and we locate the responsive records. And finally, although Ameritech asserted in its complaint that it incurs definable, discernible costs, when the Ameritech employee was asked about that, she could not identify what costs those were and could not articulate or estimate those costs.
Was she a qualified person to do that?
Yes, she was an employee who, as I recall, worked within the subpoena compliance area, and she purported to have personal knowledge on the aspects that I just stated.
Now, it is true that there isn't a request for prior costs, right? This only speaks to the future by Ameritech.
It is true that it's a that it's phrased in terms of prospective relief, but our position is that it's that because it serves no other purpose than to try to establish liability, that it is the functional equivalent of a request, a direct request for monetary relief, and that we believe that this case falls squarely within the reasoning that this court used in the MSA Realty Corporation versus State of Illinois case. And one final point I'd like to make, I have 2 points I'd like to make. One is that in we argued that imposing an obligation to reimburse for these subpoenas involves special sovereignty interests. I'm sorry, I see.
No, you may complete your thought.
Thank you. Implicated special sovereignty interests. Ameritech argued to the contrary, not disputing that the interests we asserted were special sovereignty interests, but arguing basically the state waived those because Ameritech takes the position that the state subpoena provision allows them to obtain reimbursement. Well, if that's the case, the question is, why are we here? If, as Ameritech asserts, the state subpoena statute allows for reimbursement, they can go into the state court tomorrow and get that reimbursement, which is precisely what the ECPA contemplated. If they're not entitled to reimbursement, it's because the state has made a policy decision that third parties who comply with criminal investigatory subpoenas should not expect a right to payment. And to impose the federal government's will that they be would implicate special sovereignty interests.
I have one more question.
Sure.
Is it your position that it's impossible for the federal government to pass a statute that simply places some information beyond the reach of a state subpoena? Forget about the reimbursement mechanisms, the mechanisms for obtaining it, that simply says the following information, let's say, you know, certain records of a nuclear power plant or something, anything, may not be disclosed to any state law enforcement authority.
Judge, I believe that there could be significant Tenth Amendment problems with that to the extent of blanket prohibition would undermine a state's ability to investigate crime. I think there could be a Tenth Amendment problem. But in this particular case, what's at issue is the Congress's purported attempt under 2706 to create a cause of action against the state in state court for reimbursement.
Now, I understand that that's your position. I'm just kind of trying to go back one step and say, if Congress has said the background rule is that telephone records have a sufficient privacy interest that they can't be disclosed, and now we're going to create an exception for various exceptions, but this is the state law enforcement exception, then how that regime works out, it seems to me you need to look at both halves of the equation, that's all.
I would agree that the access and reimbursement issues are separate issues.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Now, your time has expired, but you may have 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you, Your Honor. If I may, very briefly, counsel for the state was talking about how she doesn't think that we have to do extra work for AMA records, how there's no extra costs and so on. All of that is frankly wrong, and we welcome a fight on that factually later. We are here on a motion to dismiss. Our complaint was dismissed under 12b-6, and that assumes that everything we say in the complaint is true. In fact, it is true, and later on we'll prove that, but paragraphs 5 through 7 of the complaint identify that AMA records do not exist, that significant time, money, and effort must be expended to create them, that they do not exist for any other purpose other than to satisfy the requests of law enforcement. That must be taken as true. It is, as I mentioned, it is in fact true, but for purposes of this litigation, it must be taken as true. So all of her statements about depositions and that kind of thing are irrelevant. Let me also then turn to a important question here. Federal government has accorded telephone records certain privacy. It has limited law enforcement's access to them. It has done so in a way that protects both the privacy interests of the persons who have the records as well as the needs of law enforcement. That is well within Congress's power. They have done so here in a way that does not infringe on any state sovereignty interest. The documents are still there. Let me add finally in closing that the ECPA does not impose any obligation or does not give private parties like Ameritech any cause of action that Wisconsin does not already give. The state statute on which they rely specifically says that a private party who receives a request for judicial process can go into court to challenge the scope of the subpoena as just one of anything. It's, you know, it's the included but not limited to language in the statute. Therefore, we submit that the statute is proper, that our declaratory judgment action is proper, and ask that this court reverse the district court.
All right. Thanks to both counsel. The case is taken under advisement.